Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies. Here's your host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome, friends. This is Peter Herbeck, your host, and I'm going to continue today to talk about Psalms 1 and 2. I'm building on the theme of last week, trying to understand the times we're living in, the spiritual trial, the spiritual struggle, the purification that's happening in the life of the church. The Psalms, just in general, friends, I'd encourage you to read the Psalms as much as you can. Make it a part of your prayer life. Just choose one psalm a day, if you like. There's different ways you can do it. Of course, if you do the Liturgy of the Hours every day, there's lots of psalms there that you can read. But, or if you read the Magnificat, that very handy, simple prayer book that we're given that has the daily readings, but also a morning prayer and an evening prayer with psalms in it. Or you can just pick one or two psalms a day to read as part of your daily prayer life. There's a lot in the Psalms. Jesus prayed the Psalms, and one biblical scholar, Father Francis Martin, who I loved, who has gone home to the Lord, used to say that Jesus knew the Psalms by heart, not just that he memorized them, but that they expressed the depth of Jesus's personal prayer and the cry of his heart. And we can learn a lot about Jesus and Jesus's prayer by reading the Psalms. And by reading those Psalms, our heart and mind can be purified and conformed more and more to that of Jesus. So I began yesterday talking about, first read Psalm number 1, which is the psalm about the two ways, the wise man and the fool, the way of wisdom, the way the psalm said, blessed is the man who walks in the counsel of the wicked, who does not stand in the way of sinners, nor sits at the seat of scoffers, but his delight is the law of the Lord. On his law, he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. Now, this is a picture of Jesus, really. And Jesus loved the law of the Lord, his Father. Jesus said his whole life, his food was to do the will of the Father and to obey his commandments. And Jesus passed the same thing on to us. And he said, if you love me, if you love my Father, you'll obey my commandments. And the commandments of God are not an external imposition that binds us or enslaves us or cripples us or something, constrains us. It's the way to life. It's the way to fulfillment. And that's what this psalm is talking about. And that to turn away from God's commands is what's called in the psalm the way of the wicked. It's the way of the fool. It's a foolish lifestyle. It's declaring its liberation and freedom from God, but it ends up cutting oneself off from the only source that will ever fulfill us, and that's God himself. God's plans for us are good. He loves us. He wants us to be happy and to know joy and freedom and to live in love. That's God's heart for us. And he sent his son because he loves us so much, and it's so difficult for us to see that and to live in it. He sent Jesus to come to make it possible for us to see God and to be set free from all that leads us to believe lies about God, to be able to live in his freedom. And so, and then Psalm 2, these two psalms, some commentators would say, these two psalms are really the introduction to the whole Psalter. This whole book of hymns, poetic hymns, some were sung in the temple, some were used at liturgies. In fact, this one, Psalm 2, is a kingship psalm, and often accompanied like the inauguration of a new king. There was an anointing, the high priest or the priest would anoint the king when he was enthroned. And it was a sign of both God's authorization and empowerment of the king of Israel. And so it had a role to play, the psalm, in the moment, but it's also a messianic psalm. It's got an eschatological fulfillment, because even though it says so many things about the king, every human king, including King David, King Solomon, fell short in some way. So Israel began in its liturgy to see it in anticipation of the coming of the Messiah, and God's chosen king who would rule forever, ultimately. So I want to read the psalm again and just reflect on it in light of what we're experiencing today. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? Or why do the peoples plot a vain thing? Verse 2, the kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. So what we see right here is so much wisdom about the condition of the human heart and what the powerful in the world often do. Take, for example, Soviet communism. The rulers of that nation, the kings, you know, the absolute top, those who founded the Soviet Union, they set themselves against God. They had a plan against God. I mean, they planned certainly a vain thing, as history has now shown, as many leaders who've done this in history have done. Their pompous self-centeredness, their anti-God worldview, it's vain, it's foolish for the creature to raise his fist against the Creator. But this is how dark our minds are and how much pride is in the human heart, how easily deceived we are. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers, those are the rulers of culture, the most influential people in society, things like that. The rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. So in this psalm, it's against God, and the one will see who he has enthroned, his son Jesus Christ. And this is what they say, verse 3, let us burst their bonds asunder and cast their cords from us. So what the kings of the earth often get seduced into believing, because they want to be radically independent, is that God's wisdom, God's commandments, and God's way are like cords or bonds that enslave them from being anything they want to be and do anything they want to do. And so freedom means let's burst these bonds. Let's reject God's enslaving commandments. We find them offensive. We find them degrading. We find them intolerant. We find them hateful. The same spirit, the same attitude emerges time and time again and in different ways and in different forms in human history. It's talking about how in the Soviet Union it was expressed. But the same thing's happening in the Western world now, in the democratic world, even in our own country. The United States of America used to be able to acknowledge God and the things of God. It didn't force anybody to worship God, but its way of life, its culture, its laws acknowledge God in some way, and now acknowledge that man is created in God's image and likeness, and recognizing nature and nature's God, God's creative purpose. And the founders of the country and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights took that into consideration and wanted to align itself with what they understood to be reality itself. And many of the founders understood the Psalms. They knew the Psalms. They knew the way of wisdom, and they knew the way of foolishness. And so there was a cultural narrative that formed the way of life in the United States, just like across Europe, which was Christian at one point. Whole nations acknowledged and accepted this fundamental sort of basic worldview. Again, it didn't force people to believe, but the majority did accept it, and the leaders and the kings accepted it. But that changed. In Europe, it changed with the Enlightenment, the French Revolution, the so-called Enlightenment. In the United States, it's been changing in these past few decades rapidly. And so what we see are the voices of more and more atheists emerging and saying we need to detach from any kind of connection to this religious reality having an influence. We need to be completely neutral of all that. And there's a kind of growing antagonism to it. But what also is happening is a totally different story and narrative about who we are, how we got here, why we're here. Now, it's instead of coming forth from a creator and acknowledging a creative order in nature, being able to observe objective moral goods and universal principles and things that really help order the society, today, it's being rejected. It's being rejected across many universities and the laws. And there's a complete redefining and a whole new story that's emerging in the culture. And it's one that's godless, that's without God. It's the kind of a secular utopian idea of humanity. And that really what we have is ourselves. There is no God. Or if there is a God, he has nothing to do with us. and we basically don't want anything to do with him. And what we have is our own wits, our own resources, our own money, our own power, our own technology. And we can define for ourselves the meaning of life, what it means to be human, what it means to be a family, all these things that were at the foundation of building the civilization. There's a whole new story now. And what we're seeing is that the world, the secular world, each day becomes more and more offended by God, offended by God's commandments, offended by God's natural order. And so there are forces that have come together and said, enough. They're setting themselves against God and against his anointed. Jesus in particular is his anointed, and the claims of Christ, for example, that he's the only savior of the world, that he really is the ruler of the cosmos. Many, many voices across the world saying, no, 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 it's not true, it's not right. Not only is there not a God, if there is a God, there's a million ways to salvation. There's as many ways to salvation as there is people. Everybody's saved, things like this, that directly contradict the reality of who Jesus is, what he's done for us, and what he's taught us. So that's one of the fundamental things, friends, that we're seeing. And in this psalm, it's interesting. There's like four stanzas to the psalm, and in each stanza, there's like the unfolding of the drama. First, you have the kings and the rulers that are setting themselves against God, and they're trying to shape the world and the society to basically turn against God and to follow them. Then the next three verses is God's response to them. In the next three verses after it is God's decree. So first you get God's almost visceral response, and then God's decree against them. And then you get what could be King David or others appealing to the kings of the earth to get wise before it's too late, right? Because as the psalmist says here, David, that the kings of the earth plot a vain thing. And what is that vain thing? To think that you can actually oppose God and live. To think that you're going to find life in opposing God. That's the definition of foolishness. The creature shaking his fist at the creator. Every once in a while I have this image, friends, you know, that in the hot summer I saw these little anthills, and look down and you look closely, you bend down, you can see hundreds of ants, and they're going 100 miles an hour, and they're working hard, and big lines of ants climbing and carrying things. And I imagine, you know, in one footstep, I could step on them and destroy them all. I don't, but I could. But I imagined, you know, like the creature, humanity, raising its fist to God like an ant stopped in the line and looked up at me and, you know, shook its antenna at me or something and defied me and said, you know, tried to fill me with fear or tried to get everybody, all the ants on the anthill to oppose me. I mean, it's absurd. It's pathetic. And the separation between us and God and God's power and who God is and ants and humans is, it's infinite, right? And so there's a blindness. There's a pride. There's a hubris that resists God and the things of God. And that's what we're seeing emerging in our culture. Our culture is changing, and it's going to have an impact on the church. And I'd like to talk about that tomorrow. Friends, have a blessed day. Don't forget to get the free booklet that we offer you. God bless.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you Ralph Martin's booklet, What Happens When I Die, in which Ralph asks some very important questions. Is there life after death? What will it be like? How do my actions in this life affect what happens when I die? If you'd like a free copy of this booklet, you can go to 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789. Or go to our website at renewalministries.net/FOE. You can also listen to past episodes or subscribe to our podcast.